This is A Mexican Crossing Lines. Hello and welcome to A Mexican Crossing Lines. This is Cindy Gomez-Shemp.
And this is Duke Gomez-Shemp.
And you're listening to 88.1 FM KPPPLP Fargo-Moorhead, where we're adding local color to your airwaves. We are also broadcasting on Shoutcast online, so you can go to kpppfm.com and listen live. Just hit the link right there.
That's right, on the podcast link.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And today we are talking again, this is our third installment, part three, of the look at private prisons, a closer look at private prisons. And this is based off of a Mother Jones article called My 4 Months as a Private Prison Guard. And the author is senior reporter Shane Bauer. who has previously reported on solitary confinement, police militarization, and the Middle East. He's also a co-author with Sarah Shord and Joshua Fatal of A Silver Light, an account of his 2 years at a prison in Iran. So this particular article is very eye-opening because it not only gives us a look inside of the private prison industry, it gives us a look inside of prisons, which is something that is very, very rare.
That's right. It's very difficult to get inside of prisons and actually do any documentation
of anything, especially private prisons, which are not under the same kind of
access and jurisdiction.
Right. Mm-hmm. Jurisdiction as the state and federal prisons are.
Mm-hmm.
And the lobby for the private prison industry has fought against any type of legislation that would hold them more accountable so that they would have to turn over their records to the public. So it's very interesting and eye-opening look into what really is going on inside private prisons.
Definitely.
And prisons in general.
Mm-hmm.
And this particular facility is called the Wynn Correctional Facility, which is in Louisiana, right?
Yes, Louisiana. Yes,
Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
And the majority of the prisoners there are Black.
Mm-hmm.
So we've talked about this in prior shows that we've done on this topic. We've had two other parts where we started this whole review.
That's right. Yeah.
And I felt that it was so important for people to find out what was going on in this article that I wanted to devote this time to this particular piece. I've never seen anything like it in media, in investigative reporting of its like in my lifetime. I think it's that important that we look at it, especially in the climate of police brutality in America that we are facing today. And in fact, Sean King has been doing a 15-part series.
Yeah, big series.
Mm-hmm. On examining police brutality in America, policing in America, and giving a comprehensive list of solutions that are actually workable.
Yes.
That can be implemented.
Mm-hmm. In our lifetime.
In our lifetime. Yes, that will significantly reduce the amount of people being killed by police every day. So today's program is going to focus specifically on CCA's cost-saving measures, their guard pay, and the hours that the guards have to keep.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about how that affects security for the guards and the prisoners, and also for the community at large, as well as giving you some background on, you know, the details of what's going on inside in terms of safety.
Yes.
So let's begin this program by listening to a video from this article. There are several in the series, and this one is detailing what happened one day when a prisoner escaped from Wynn Correctional Facility. And then I'll give you more details afterwards. But first, I want to encourage folks to contact us about their experiences inside of detention centers and prisons, and share their stories
with
our station.
That's right. First-hand knowledge, second-hand knowledge. You know, if you know anyone who's been in prison, you know, talk to them about the conditions, about what's going on. We would like to hear from you. There's many ways to get a hold of us. You can contact us at 701-566-0917. Again, that number is 701-566-0917. It's a message line, so you can leave us a message, maybe a couple minutes, and we could play it on the air. Tell us who you are, where you live. You can also tweet us at media_PPP. You can email Cindy at kpppfm.com or Duke at kpppfm.com. You can follow us on Facebook at 88.1 FM Fargo-Moorhead, the People's Press Project, and Mexi-Can.
Okay. Now, we're going to go to the audio here from this video that was posted along with this Mother Jones article about the escape that occurred. And all of this really gives you an insight into the cost-cutting, you know, corner-cutting measures that are being taken by the private prison industry, and how this results in a lack of safety and security for everyone involved.
Definitely.
Let's listen to that now.
Today was my 12th day of training, and I found out as soon as I got to the prison that yesterday there was an escape.
He was out there on a small yard on the basketball, what we call the basketball side, where you can, you know, play basketball.
he was able to climb over the fence.
He went up the fence, got on the roof of the building, the double chain link fence, 12, 15 foot high, something like that. Climbed up it, got over both razor wires.
Ran through the forest, stole Hunter's truck.
Got on the road, got stopped at a roadblock because of his nervousness, gave himself away, got busted.
The prison staff didn't actually know that he escaped for 2-3 hours.
Not enough people for security.
There are 4 or 5 guard towers around the prison, and around 4 years ago, the company decided to replace the guards in those towers with cameras. If there had been guards in those towers, they would have almost certainly seen somebody trying to jump the fence.
No ifs, ands, buts about it.
Today was the end of my third week, and I got my first paycheck. The paycheck, which is for 2 weeks of work, is for $587. I honestly do not know how somebody lives on that wage here.
Turnover was just awful.
One of the main reasons why we can't keep anybody here is because you're paying. Ask your damn bean counters why nobody wants to stay. Between the danger level that we got to put up with from the ivory tower and the lack of a living wage, nobody's going to put up with this forever.
I'm right now. I just left the prison, and on my way out, I was stopped and told that I had to come in tomorrow. I told him I'm not coming. Doing this job exhausted is really stupid.
And I think by stupid, he means dangerous.
Yes.
And I think that, you know, well, there was a lot of, we should have put beeps in there so we could hear the.
We took the swear words out.
There were expletives in them. That we can't play for you, but you could hear the anger in that correctional officer's voice as he's expressing, you know, the high turnover rate and how they can't keep people working there because they don't have a living wage and because of all of the policies and politics.
They're trying to save money, and they replaced people with cameras, and then it was very ineffective. And to have a workforce that is stressed and underpaid, they're not going to do a good job of being humane to prisoners.
No. I mean,
it's a very important issue to be talking about.
They're not going to be doing a good job, period.
Mm-hmm.
Like, would you want to have a bunch of people flying planes around this country that haven't had enough sleep?
That's right.
And you're in the plane, you know? Mm-hmm. No, of course not. These are the kinds of things that are going on inside of a correctional facility. Yes. With a high likelihood of people escape from these places all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, go and look it up, Google that stuff, and you'll find that there's prison escapes of this sort happening all over the country all the time. In this particular instance, the guy whose name was Chase Cortez, they told us he'd only had 3 months more to go.
Wow.
And he decided he was done. So he took off with only 3 months to go. And CCA said that the newer technology made those watchtowers obsolete and that the company had fired a guard for ignoring an alarm. They also said that the guard's wages were competitive and that long hours were sometimes necessary to ensure security. And that they have enough guards.
Oh, right.
This was after, of course, this interview with Shane Bauer.
Mm-hmm.
And you should also know that when Chase escaped from the prison, he was in view of those guard towers. But as we said, they've been unmanned since 2010. So now a single correctional officer has to watch the video feeds from at least 30 different cameras.
Yeah, yeah. Not very effective.
And not miss anything, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And Cortez saw a patrol van that was passing, jumped down from the backside of the building, and then he climbed the razor wire perimeter fence and got into the forest. Then he, you know, we heard that he stole the pickup truck from a hunter, which luckily had been left unlocked with a key in the ignition. Mm. But at Wynn facility, at the correctional facility, in the control room, an alarm did sound.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And that would have indicated to the guards inside that someone had touched the outer fence and that they were, you know, possibly breaching the perimeter. So the officer that was in there just switched the alarm off.
Oh.
And then went back to whatever she was doing before. Maybe she was playing
video games or watching TV or who knows what.
What's going on. Yeah. But she's just like, no need to worry there. Turned it off and then went back to whatever she was doing.
Hmm.
She said she didn't notice anything on the video screen, but she did not review the footage.
Yeah.
Hours passed. So she hears an alarm and she didn't go and back and play the footage and go, let me see if there was something that happened.
Yeah.
But she claims that she never saw anything. Hours passed before anyone realized that someone was even missing.
Wow.
And this is even more shocking. Some of the guards told Shane Bauer, the reporter on this story,
mm-hmm,
that it was an inmate who finally brought the escape to the attention of the guards.
Wow.
It had to be an inmate that notified them, hey, one of the people is missing.
That's right.
Otherwise, they wouldn't have figured it out. And this guy was caught, you know, in the evening after the sheriffs chased him and he crashed that truck into a fence and then they caught him. But the next morning, the prison was on lockdown.
Oh, yeah. After the fact, yes.
Yes. And everyone there was very worried that they were going to lose their contract with the state of Louisiana.
Oh, I suppose.
And then Shane talks about, to give you more details of how something like this can possibly happen and why this is happening in prisons, especially private prisons across this country, Shane goes in to explain how they were trained. And the training starts off at this point in his training with a video of the founder of CCA, which is T. Don Hutto.
Oh, uh-huh.
And Thomas Beasley, where mm-hmm, they tell their story of origin in the video. And they recount that in 1983, they won the first contract ever to design, build, finance, and operate a secure correctional facility in the world.
Oh, yeah.
The Immigration and Naturalization Services gave them 90 days to get it done.
Oh, boy. 90 days to build it?
Yes.
Everything? Wow.
Everything. Wow. So what he did was Hutto quickly just converted a Houston motel into a detention center.
Oh, that's right. I remember the story.
And he opened the facility on Super Bowl Sunday in the end of that January in 1983. Yeah. So at around 10 o'clock that night, they were receiving inmates.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I actually took their pictures and fingerprinted them. Several other people walked them to their rooms, if you will,
mm-hmm,
and we got our very first day's pay for 87 undocumented aliens. And at the end of the video, both men chuckle.
Yeah.
It's and you know, there's such a huge danger in commoditizing the prison industry.
Mm-hmm.
But the cavalier way in which this is described is shocking.
Yeah, very inhumane.
It is. I mean, the whole idea of privatized prisons originated in the 1980s with Beasley, his business partner, Hutto's mm-hmm, business partner, and another fellow businessman, Dr. Robert Krantz. Both of those had zero experience mm-hmm, in the corrections industry.
I see.
So that's why they recruited Hutto,
mm-hmm,
because he had been the head of Virginia's and Arkansas's prisons.
I see.
In a 1978 ruling, the Supreme Court had found that a succession of the Arkansas prison administrations, including Hutto's, had, quote unquote, tried to operate their prisons at a profit.
Okay.
And that is a very damning statement coming from the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
These guys had already been caught trying to operate prisons like for-profit businesses.
Yeah, making cuts and trimming edges and making the food terrible and condition is terrible.
It is stated that guards on horseback herded inmates who sometimes didn't even have shoes to the fields.
Wow.
And the year after Hutto joined CCA, he became the head of the American Correctional Association.
Okay.
Which is the largest prison association in the world.
Wow.
That is chilling to me. And we'll talk more about that in the future, because you will also find that Dante Hutto's association that he is in charge of is who also does the yearly reviews of all the prisons in America.
Okay.
And gives them either a passing or failing grade to continue in operation.
So if they're his, they're going to get passed.
They always have.
Yeah.
So to Beasley, going back to Beasley, that guy was the former chairman of the Tennessee Republican Party.
Oh, yeah.
Any surprises there?
Nope.
And the business of private prisons for him was simple. This is what he said. You just sell it like you're selling cars or real estate or hamburgers.
Okay.
That's what he said to Inc. magazine in 1988. That's the mindset that these folks have about the lives of inmates and the community that they serve and also the guards that are inside of those facilities. Both Beasley and Krantz ran their businesses like hotel chains.
Okay, just fill the rooms.
And they charged the government a daily rate for each inmate. That's how they were making their money.
Yeah.
Early investors, this will be shocking to you, included Sodexo Marriott.
Oh, yeah.
The hotel.
Yeah.
And venture capitalist Jack Macy, who helped build the Kentucky Fried Chicken, Wendy's, and Hospital Corporations of America.
Oh, man. So they're selling it like a franchise. They're selling chicken, you know?
Yes. I mean, it's disgusting. It's shocking. Where this comes from, but it's important for people to know the history of how these businesses were created.
And also that the people involved and companies involved, I mean, for investors, I mean, there are investors in the private prisons, so they're making profit off the profit of private prisons.
And the misery of people, mostly undocumented immigrants. The majority of CCA's holdings is in detention centers for people that don't have any rights in this country.
They're not even charged, you know?
Yeah, which when you think about the reality of what that means in terms of the negligence that we're hearing that is being alleged at these facilities that has been documented by Shane Bauer, extensively documented, you can only imagine the horrors experienced by people in these detention facilities and in these private prisons.
That's right. And they should be humane. I mean, I can sit there and think of what some of people are thinking when they hear this, like, well, it's prison. People are being punished.
But we have laws about this.
Well, we have human rights, you know, and the violation of human rights and civil rights is just not right. You know, and you know, people, and also every person has a different story, different situation, especially with detaining people that are undocumented. There's all sorts of conditions that they shouldn't just be thrown in this pit, you know, and mistreated equally between all the people there. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. It's horrible.
And we, you know, we've talked extensively about the broken immigration system in this country. We encourage you to go back and look on kppfm.com.
That's right.
For those other programs.
That's right. Just look at our podcast link and you'll see all the shows that we've been doing and just listen to them.
Yeah, they're really educational. If you really want to find out what's going on, take a listen right there and you will hear. But let's give you a little bit more background into this. I mean, we're just talking about the law. First, you have to understand that the 1980s were a great time to start the lucrative incarceration business.
Wow.
The prison population was skyrocketing. Remember the war on drugs? Remember Ronald Reagan's war on drugs? Well, that was just heating up. And the length of prison sentences was increasing. Remember all of these laws, mandatory minimum laws that came around? States were starting to mandate prisoners serve at least 85% of their terms. So between 1980 and 1990, state spending on prisons quadrupled.
Wow. But
even that wasn't enough. In many states, the prisons were filled beyond their capacity. And that's when a federal court declared in 1985 that Tennessee's overcrowded prisons violated the Eighth Amendment's ban on cruel and unusual punishments.
Good.
They were saying, you can't have this many people inside prisons.
Mm-hmm.
So CCA decided to make an audacious proposal to take over the entire state's prison systems.
Wow.
Of course, their bid was completely unsuccessful, but it did plant the idea in the minds of politicians all around the country.
Because
they weren't going to stop incarcerating more people.
Yeah.
That wasn't what they thought they should do when they got this decision.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, they decided, hey, privatization is an option.
Yeah.
Privatization also gave the states a way to quickly expand their prison systems without taking on any new debt.
Yeah, or to have to go to the legislature or Congress to get more money, you know?
Exactly. So for them, it was this perfect marriage of fiscal and tough on crime conservatism.
Mm-hmm.
And the companies would have to fund and construct the new lockups while the courts would make sure to keep them full.
Yeah, keep the hotel full.
They all work together. Do you see how that works?
Yeah.
Okay. And also, the private and prison, public and private prison population. Here are some of the numbers. There was an enormous jump in the prison population from 1990 to 2014. If you go to the link for this article, you can see all the graphics for yourself. But in 1990, it was 674,466. In 2014, it jumped to 1,259,768 public prisoners.
Wow.
And another 170,599 private prisoners.
Wow.
These are for people serving more than a year.
Mm-hmm.
That does not include people serving less than a year.
That's 2 million people.
Yeah, that's just in the present.
Mm-hmm.
When CCA shares first appeared on the NASDAQ stock exchange in 1986, the company had two detentional centers and two immigration centers. Today, they run more than 60 facilities.
Wow.
And they range from state prisons and jails to federal immigration detention centers. All told, they house at least 66,000 inmates at any given time.
Wow.
And the main competitor, which is Geo Group, has more than 70,000 inmates in the U.S. So currently private prisons oversee about 8% of this country's total prison population.
And they're going for more.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to do a hostile takeover of all the prisons and own them all.
Yeah, and whatever money that the CCA is receiving from taxpayers has to cover everything from housing to feeding to medical care and to the rehabilitation of inmates. How do you think that's going to work while you're squeezing pennies?
Mm-hmm.
So Shane Bauer said that while he was working at CCA, they were paid about $34 a day per inmate.
Yeah.
In comparison, the state's publicly run prisons get about $52 a day. Some of them even get about up to $80 per day, both private and
public
state prisons can get up to that much. But, you know, they averaged $34.
Okay.
In 2015, CCA reported $1.9 billion with a B in revenue.
Wow.
It had more than $221 million in net income. That's more than $3,300 for each prisoner in its care.
Hmm.
Think about that.
Yeah.
And these are very poor people, the majority of them.
Mm-hmm.
CCA and other prison companies have written occupancy guarantees into their contracts.
I see.
Which require the states to pay a fee, a fine, if you will, if they can't provide a certain number of inmates. This, to me, on its face, is a recipe for corruption.
Definitely.
Two-thirds of the private prison contracts recently reviewed by the anti-privatization group in the public interest had these prisoner quotas. So under CCA's contract, WIN was guaranteed to be 96% full.
Wow.
Wow. It's exactly true. We're going to continue talking about this and more on the cost-cutting and the effects of that on Mexican Crossing Lines, the special third part edition on private prisons right after this musical break.
Don't you know, we're talking about a revolution sounds. Don't you know, we're talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. While they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around waiting for a promotion. Don't you know, we're talking about a revolution. Gonna rise up, get their share. Poor people gonna rise up, take what's there. Don't you know you better run, 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 run. Oh, I said you better run, 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 run. Cause finally the tables are starting to turn. Talking about the revolution.
Everybody, welcome back. This is Cindy Gomez-Shemp.
And this is Duke Gomez-Shemp.
And you're listening to A Mexican Crossing Lines on 88.1 FM. KPPPLP, Fargo-Moorhead, where we are adding local color to your airwaves. And we are also broadcasting through Shoutcast online mm-hmm. at kppfm.com. You can go there and listen live.
That's right.
Also, of course, we've been sharing that we want to hear about the experiences of people in the community with the prison system, with the detention system, with the jail system. And of course, you can always comment on this program
right.
or any other topics that you'd like to hear.
It's so important for people who have the real experience to actually communicate, because it's very hard to get information from the prisons and what's going on. You have this author from Mother Jones going in and doing this investigative report. You know, the real people have the stories and they need to be heard, because the local, national, commercial media will not cover this. So, you know, you should chime in. You should let us know what's going on. If you have any information, let us know. There's several ways you can get a hold of us. You can call our message line at 701-566-0917. Again, that number is 701-566-0917. Leave us a message. Tell us who you are and where you live, and we may play it on the air. It would be great. You can also tweet us at @media_PPP. You can email Cindy at kpppfm.com or Duke at kpppfm.com. You can follow us on Facebook at 88.1 FM Fargo-Moorhead, the People's Press Project, and Mexi-Can.
Yes, and we would very much appreciate for you to share your thoughts on our social media pages as well. So today we're talking about the private prisons, but we have been covering a variety of shows on this topic. This is the third in a multi-part series mm-hmm. about this article that came from Shane Bauer.
Yes.
And he is a reporter, a senior reporter with Mother Jones. He's been talking about the militarization of our police and the atrocious state of solitary confinement. And also, he's reported extensively on the Middle East. He's also a co-author with Sarah Shord, and Joshua Fatal of the book A Sliver of Light,
mm-hmm.
which talks about his account being 2 years as a prisoner in Iran.
Wow.
This guy has some serious chops, and yep. He tells a fascinating story of his 4 months as a private prison guard.
That's right.
In the past on this show, we've covered a variety of facets of this story, including the very loose hiring practices mm-hmm. that they have there.
That's right. You can be a felon and still get a job as a correctional officer in this prison we're talking about, you know, and it's like, check the resume. Oh, well, you know, we'll let you in. And the pay is low and the morale is low and people are overworked. They live in a community that's very poor. I mean, the housing situation is really bad and they're out in the sticks.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it is, you know, a recipe that is creating exactly what the environment is cultivating, mm-hmm. which is poverty.
Yeah.
A lack of accountability,
mm-hmm.
a lack of transparency. They're out in the sticks, as you said,
yeah.
and many of these facilities are put out in the middle of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
That lends itself to creating more danger for the inmates inside if they ever were to become ill.
Yes, and you know the core issue, too, is the treatment of people, of human beings. I mean, it's in the Constitution that there shouldn't be cruel and unjust punishment. I mean, that's talking about what's going on in these understaffed prisons that are focused on making money, cutting the corners, and treating people very cruelly. I mean, that's a really big issue. And then having really poor trained staff and not enough people, like hundreds of inmates for one correctional officer at a time, it creates conditions that can be very harmful for the prisoners. And we should care about all people. Whether you've been arrested or imprisoned, you're still a human being and your human rights need to be protected.
And what we've been seeing as more lawsuits come forward, as more people are videotaping what is going on
mm-hmm.
inside of these facilities, and those become available to the public, as we saw in another video today
yes.
from another Susie Chavez.
Oh yes,
who was brutally assaulted by the correctional officers in a video that was released today. It was just outlandish
the
way that she was treated. Because she had posters.
Yeah, her infraction, she had posters on the wall.
The way that people are treated in these facilities for this.
Yeah, they should have just taken them down so you can have it. And they tased her, they're dragging her, they're twisting her arms, and she's screaming, they're saying, shut up. And they keep on brutalizing her to get her to, and then they're going to take her to medical after they tased her, and they're threatening to mace her just for being hurt. And also just the crime was she had posters on her wall.
The thing that's really astonishing when you look at so many of these stories, I mean, we heard about how Sandra Bland died mm-hmm. inside of a prison, and we've heard so many other horrifying stories, including one where the young man who was taken into custody was accused of a crime for which he had not been charged,
mm-hmm.
but he didn't have enough money to post bail.
Yeah.
And he was killed somehow.
Yeah.
He died. His family was not notified. The correctional facility said that they did. I think it was Rikers. Said that they did try to notify the family, but they weren't able to get a hold of anyone. So they went ahead and buried this man.
Yeah.
And his family claims that they always knew exactly where the mm-hmm. family members were and never tried to notify them, that after they insisted for a long time on information about their son, they were finally notified through a letter that he had died and that he had been buried. And when they tried to find out where he was, what he had died from, mm-hmm. where he was buried, they had no answers for them.
Yeah.
And they told them they couldn't tell them where their son was buried.
Wow.
It's like
that's horrible.
Invasion of the body snatchers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Once you're taken into police custody, once you're going into that system, your life is basically valueless.
That's right.
Within that system.
Mm-hmm.
And the kinds of abuses that we're hearing about, the types of neglect in the food, in the cutting of corners in terms of the number of guards.
Yeah.
We heard a lot in our previous programs about the tension that occurs when you have not enough staff to run the programs to keep the prisoners active or working or doing something productive.
That's right. You can't just put people in a room and just have them sit there for years and years.
In a cage, in a tiny, cage. Tiny yes. little, they described it like a tomb. Isn't that what they said?
Yeah, that was like a 8 feet by 4 feet with two bunks in it, without a toilet, without running water, you know, and there's lighting issues, you know, just horrible conditions.
I mean, and when you hear that they don't have enough staff, even to secure the prison, which it's clear from this article that a majority of the time that the prison is on lockdown, it's simply because that's the simplest way to monitor the prisoners, to keep them locked in cages all day rather than letting them out for any kind of physical activity.
Mm-hmm.
Not even to go out into the yard and walk around and get fresh air.
Or even to research their cases and to fight for their rights in court. You know, they just can't go anywhere. They just have to sit there.
And they many times complain about the fact that they don't get fed when they're supposed to eat.
Yeah.
There's no regular rhythm of, okay, you know, I only have to make it till this time and then I'll get some food.
Yeah.
They talk about a lack of adequate nutrition. They speak about the kinds of contraband that regularly pours into the correctional facility with what appears to be no oversight, no
consequence.
And even the inmates would tell the guards, yeah, don't focus on any of that because it continues to happen and no one's going to stop it.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't get paid enough to stick your neck out for that.
Yeah.
And then on the other hand, we have trainers telling the COs, hey, don't bother stopping any violence that's going on inside of the prison because you're not getting paid enough stick your neck out
that's
for
right.
that. They're actually a bunch of folks that seem to be encouraged to, you know, ignore violence and violations within the prison and to commit infractions.
Themselves.
They're incentivized to commit infractions and to commit violence against these inmates.
Mm-hmm.
We heard also that they have, inside the same building in Cypress Hall, in the segregation unit, they have a little court where they take people. And they give them additional charges. This is not a court of law.
That's right.
This is basically
kangaroo court, like you said. And it's designed to keep them there longer because they get paid per day. And so they can tack on more onto a sentence. You know, I don't know how that works in the law, but they have them in custody and they're going to keep them longer.
Well, they're charging them with things like rape, murder, theft.
Oh.
I mean, serious crimes that occur... Well, these kinds of crimes are occurring with regularity within the confines of these prisons.
Yeah. And where's the due process there?
It doesn't exist.
Yeah.
But those courts are allowed to tack on years of time at anybody's whim, you know, and the person that is the administrator of the court is usually one of the people that works there.
Yeah. It's Joe who was watching the video cameras on the guard towers, and he's the judge.
Whose job it is to, you know, whose job benefits from there being a continual supply of fresh bodies or continuing bodies to be inside of that prison system. And going back to the cost savings of what, you know, what they're doing within these facilities, the main argument that has always been put forth in every state where they have implemented these private industries, private prison industries, in Arizona, in all, you know, all throughout the South where they've done this, they've always argued, and the governors have always argued, and the legislators have always argued that they're doing this to save the taxpayers' money.
Yeah, yeah.
Listen, if I can't significantly save money for the state, we're not going to do this. Because every time that this happens in a state, people bring up the concern for the, you know, the abuses that could come from this.
Mm-hmm.
You're really setting a situation up to be ripe for corruption and abuse.
Yeah.
It's incentivized by mm-hmm. profit mm-hmm. for that. And so the legislators always come back and these leaders always come back with, listen, if this isn't going to save us a significant amount of money, we're not even going to do it.
Yeah.
But let's analyze whether or not that's true, because Shane Bauer did.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about the differences between the statistical information that's out there on whether or not it's true that the private prison industry is even saving anyone any money.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I submit, based on what I've heard from this article, mm-hmm. that it's not. The cost savings do not outweigh any sort of benefit. I can't mm-hmm. even use the word benefit,
because yeah.
what it actually does is incentivize the dehumanization and the human rights violations of thousands, if not millions, of people across
mm-hmm.
this country.
Mm-hmm.
In one study, it was estimated that the private prison industry cost 15% less than the public ones. Another one found that public prisons were only 14% cheaper. But after reviewing these competing claims, researchers concluded that the actual savings were, quote unquote, minimal.
Okay.
That means to me negligible.
Mm-hmm.
Not very much. Not of any consequence, like the way the politicians were describing when they have used that cost savings factor to sell these private prisons to their states,
mm-hmm.
because that's what we've seen.
Yeah.
CCA also directed Shane to a report from 2013 that was funded in part by CCA as well as Geo Group,
okay.
both of whom directly benefit from mm-hmm. a slanted report.
That's right.
Which claimed that the private prison industry could save states as much as 59%.
Oh.
over the public prison system.
Wow.
Without, this is the important part, without sacrificing quality.
Oh, right.
But from what you've heard so far, what do you think of that claim?
Yeah, it depends what they mean by quality. You know, which is, there's no quality in what we've been hearing about. You know, there's no quality of care, no quality of keeping someone in prison to reform them. I mean, there's no classes, there's no ways for people to prepare to leave prison. They're focused on keeping people in prison.
And there isn't even any programs to help rehabilitate
mm-hmm.
these folks in any significant way. In fact, according to one Justice Department study, and this is typical of the CCA model in what they're doing, not just at Wynn Correctional Facility, but across the board in their prisons and in their detention facilities. But one Justice Department study stated that what CCA is saving, really,
mm-hmm.
they achieve through moderate reduction in their staffing patterns,
yeah.
which means not enough staff.
Yep.
I'll translate these for you as we go.
Good, good.
By reducing fringe benefits, which means, like Shane Bauer explained, a fringe benefit makes it sound like it's some like opulent thing for
That's
rich
right.
people and rich people jobs.
Some extra thing, you know?
No. Reduction in fringe benefits means basically you have no benefits.
Yeah.
What he described as their benefits was free counseling services yeah. on a suicide hotline.
Yeah, when you're so depressed from doing a job, they might, you know, let you go talk to a counselor. That's your fringe benefit.
That's your fringe benefit,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, they should be providing for everyone there unilaterally, because they're the ones causing a lot of that mm-hmm. Sadness that leads to, you know, the depression and the suicidal ideation and the violence with their family members that is reported a lot, not just in police officers, but also in correctional officers. Mm-hmm. But What this Department of Justice report also found was that the other things that they cut, you know, is stuff like sick pay.
Oh, yeah.
So Shane said, don't get sick.
Don't
because
get sick. You won't get paid.
Because you can't get paid.
Mm-hmm.
But he also talked about the fact that he was really ticked off that they were going to have to come in and work all these long hours.
Mm-hmm.
So the reduction in staffing patterns also means that they're overworking their poorly paid staff, a staff which one of the guards that you heard on this program today said didn't have a living wage, mm-hmm. that lives in a community that has a depressed economy mm-hmm. and not enough opportunities for the folks that are living there,
yeah.
either in education or housing or anything else. So the way in which they're making these savings is by cutting all of the ways in which people have upward mobility
mm-hmm.
and the ways in which they have better security within yeah, their prison.
Exactly.
And the fact is that wages and benefits account for 59% of CCA's operational expenses.
Yes. Yeah.
Think about that.
Mm-hmm.
When Shane Bauer started working at Wynn Correctional Facility, all non-ranking guards made just $9 an hour.
Wow.
That's irrespective of how long they'd been working there. It doesn't matter how many years you've been there. Hmm. You still make the same amount. And the starting pay for guards at public prisons comes out to about $12.50 an hour.
Wow.
It's still not enough.
It's still not enough.
But I think that what we can see very clearly here is that cutting corners, whether it's in the public prison system or in the private system, is a recipe for chaos mm-hmm. and disaster. And in the next installment of this program, we're going to talk about the trauma that it's experienced inside of the facilities by the inmates and the lack of medical care that they experience, the medical negligence that is going on, and much more. I thank you very much for listening to this program on private prisons. This is Cindy Gomez-Shemp.
And this is Duke Gomez-Shemp.
You've been listening to 88.1 FM, KPPPLP, where we are adding local color to your airways. Thanks for listening.
Break or retreat at every time. suppose it's a push for moving on. And time.